Hello, everybody. My name is Rosie, and welcome to Turned on the AC, a podcast where we highlight Asian Christian creatives navigating through life in today's modern society. We pray that each conversation and episode helps to create community, inspire, challenge, and encourage whatever stage of life and season you're in. So join us for today's episode. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Turn on the AC. Today, I am super excited to introduce you guys to Tiger. Tiger is an award-winning, high-energy creative professional working as a video producer, director, film editor, and content producer for both corporate and nonprofit organizations. He is a strategist building engaging content, attracting 484 million online views and 400 million minutes of watch time over the production of 100 plus videos. He's worked with companies such as BuzzFeed, NBC's Universal's Playful, and has worked on the creative team for Australia's well-loved toilet paper brand, Who Gives a Crap, where his efforts contributed to raising millions of dollars to help build toilets in developing countries. He currently works in social media, amplifying trends and diverse creators in an effort to create a more empathetic community online. And during his spare time outside of work, you can find him leading the creative team at church, as well as documenting international mission trips in Malawi, Africa, to not only amplify marginalized voices, but to allow other people to join in on the work that God is doing. So, Tiger, thank you so much for being here amongst your super busy schedule and this transition that you're currently in. I think it's just super honoring because I got to meet you and hear your story in person, and to now actually get to talk about your creative process is something that I'm so excited to do today.
Yeah, it's exciting to be here. You literally caught me right in the middle of a transition, but it's settled down enough so I can talk about new things. Also, I have my cow hat on because I just started grad school as well. So there you go.
That's awesome. And we're going to dive a little bit more into that later. But for now, I want you to show and tell us something that means a lot to you and why it means a lot to you.
Yeah. So I went around my room and I found my film camera. I usually have a digital camera on me, but I recently got this film camera a couple months ago, and I've only used two rolls of film ever since then. But I really do cherish these photos a little bit more than the other ones, just because I have to be way more intentional with it. It takes a lot more sacrifice to get these photos developed. And honestly, I don't even know what's even on these rolls of film anymore. I just know everything I took a picture on is like an important moment that I wanted to remember. Whereas like when I use my phone or my digital camera, it's kind of just like snap and forget, and maybe I'll look right after. And I might not even use a majority of them, you know, but at least with this film camera, it's like, oh, I want every single moment in this camera.
Thank you for sharing your film camera. What was the reason why you started taking film?
I mainly started taking film because I just was watching film videos on the internet. Like, it just showed up in my algorithm, and I was like, wow, there's something about these photos that feel a little bit extra special. Even though they may not be like technically the best thing, you know, maybe like slightly out of focus, or it's not straight, or the angle might be off, but I was like, this feels like a special moment. And I just like the idea of like, oh, all my special moments are in this one little thing, instead of having it mixed up with all the other stuff that I just take pictures of.
Yeah, me too. And I'm pretty sure your pictures turn out amazing. So I can't wait to see what it looks like when you develop all of those ones and that one. So, you know, amongst everything that's happening currently in your season of life, how has God been present in your life recently?
I just made this transition to the Bay Area, and I've been on this like nonstop season of just movement, where there's not really a day to like really rest because there's just so many things to keep up with. Whether it was like moving from LA to the Bay Area, or starting grad school, or just getting settled in this new place, I just feel like there's any moment here, it could have all fallen apart. Like I was on a missions trip to Malawi, Africa for like 10 days. And then right when I moved, I needed to move to the Bay Area. And then like 3 days later, I was going to start grad school. And then somehow in between that, I needed to find a place to live too. So it was just like all these things of like, there is no way this can happen if it wasn't meant to happen. So I think for me, God has been really present in my life today, recently, just really believing that he's a provider. And he definitely calls me to do certain things. And even though I'm like, I don't know how this is going to happen, but I truly believe if it's supposed to happen, God is just going to like move things around, you know, that are outside of my control to make it happen. So I really just like the idea that God has already gone before me and now I just have to move.
Yeah, I really love what you just said about how God has been providing for you and like amongst all that crazy thing for it to still work out. It's definitely something I can relate to because I also moved to Ohio from Kansas, and I remember I was pushed with this deadline. I also came back from a trip from Africa, and they're like, okay, like you need to pick a place to live and we need to figure out which airport you're flying from. And I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know. I've never moved before to especially a different state, but just like you said, if God wants you there, he'll provide a way. And so yeah, he's definitely been doing that. So can you tell us like why did you make this change to move to the Bay Area? Like what was the reason for bringing you there?
Yeah, about a year ago, I was in my creative career and I was like, what else do I want to do in this space? And my answer was nothing. I felt like I did a lot of the things that I wanted to do at this point. And then I was working at the toilet paper company and we did raise millions of dollars to give it away to help build toilets. And I really love the idea that we can use business to just generate revenue and do something good in the world. And I was like, that's a great idea. Like just to go make the money and then give it away. And so since then, I decided that I wanted to go to business school and I've been prepping ever since then, studying for my tests and applying. And then eventually I got in. I applied to like 5 different schools. I got rejected literally from all of them. And then one of them was like, but if you want to apply for the part-time program, we can transfer all your full-time stuff over to the part-time program for free. So I said, yeah, why not? So I applied for the part-time program. And then I got in, and then I had a month basically to figure out my move to the Bay Area. And that's why I am in the Bay Area now. I'm going to grad school for business, learning about social entrepreneurship for the next 3 years.
Wow. I love how you came to the point of like, what do you want to do in your next creative process? And you're like, nothing. Like, I want to get to that point.
And it's I guess for me, the business entrepreneurial part is still, in a sense, like pretty creative in the sense where like you still have to create something. It's just business is my new toolkit to create something.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I've had entrepreneurs on here who, you know, went to business school, and somebody else who's going to be a special guest as well, she's also a business major. And you can still see the creativity in that and what they're doing and how they apply the business aspect to the creative process and how they think when they're working with Christ. Like first season, we had Sarah Hartono, and she described that God was like her CEO in the season of life. And I found that like really interesting because I was like, okay, you know, they're probably going to pick father, friend, you know, something like that. But she's like, no, he's my CEO. And so I really love the idea that you want to learn more to not only like benefit yourself, but benefit God's kingdom eventually with the stuff that you want to do.
Yeah, I don't have much to add to that, but yes.
No, you're good. So, Tiger, could you briefly tell us about how you found Jesus and how he's guided you through this, like, journey?
Yeah, I grew up Buddhist, and then I was dating this girl who was a pastor's kid, and then I was just going to church with her because it was like, why not? Let's just go to church. Eventually, we broke up, and then I was like, I think I need to go back to church for myself, wherever this thought came from. So I went. I just found a church called Mosaic. I showed up one day, and then I stayed. I served. I learned what serving was about. Ended up getting baptized at Mosaic. Ended up leading teams at Mosaic. Really, it just became like home. And that's really what happened. I was going through a breakup and was like, my life is in shambles. What do I need right now? And for some reason, I thought God. So that's what happened.
That's awesome. And then how did that intertwine with like your creative journey and how you knew that you wanted to like go into filmmaking and storytelling?
Oh, cool. At this point, I was already a video producer at BuzzFeed. So I was already making videos. The interesting part is that BuzzFeed was like a 5-minute drive from church. So then after work, I just went to church, which was super interesting. But also Mosaic has a lot of creative people as well because it's in LA. So when I showed up, I was like, oh my gosh, all these people think like me. They all have careers like me, but they all have this extra thing that I couldn't find on my own through just creativity or through work. And I was like, what is this light that people have? And I just surrounded myself with those people and was like, oh, it's Jesus. Jesus is the light.
I love that. What was the thing that drew you to continue to like coming to church and continuing to like find out who Jesus was? And like, you know, why did that matter to you?
I went to church, and after the first day, I was like, wow, I feel better. And then I only was going to church because it made me feel better. So I was like, I'm just going to keep going until I just feel good. And then at some point, I didn't realize it, but I was like, oh, wow, I feel healed. And then at that point, I was like, oh, I understand the power of Jesus and inviting him into your life and having a relationship with him. And at that point, I was like, well, I'm already in. Like, I get the importance of all these things now. Why not share it with other people? And that's why I stayed, because I understood how important it is. And other people needed to know.
Yeah, I love that. I love how like other people can also relate to your story, but also how it is uniquely fit to you and the way that God was healing you, even though like you didn't know at the time, like you're just like, this is for me. And I think that's an amazing story, just to see how God has taken you from like this Buddhist background to now serving the church, going on mission field, going to school for business.
Been an interesting journey. So it feels very uniquely mine, which is pretty cool, because I think I can look back at my own life and understand the circles of communities that I can go back to that don't have Jesus in it, but now I have a stake in them. Like I can like show up and I have a sense of influence. So it's pretty cool to go back and be like, oh, now I have a different relationship with God that I can also introduce other people to. So.
Yeah, that's great. So I want to like touch back on this Buddhist background. Are your parents still Buddhist or?
Yeah, they're still Buddhist.
How did they take it when they found out that you were Christian?
At first, they didn't really understand it. I still don't think I still don't think they truly understand it, but at some point, I think they just accepted that this is what I do, because every Sunday I'm at church, and now I'm like traveling the world also with church. And now they're like, well, this is what he does. And it's not like he's doing anything bad. So just let him be.
Right. That's like me when I tell my parents that I'm hanging out late, and they're like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm just at church. Like, nothing bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. That must be definitely a struggle, though, because I know that in Thailand, when they believe in Christ, like, they literally have to, like, in a sense, because to them, like, their religion is everything to them. And so for them to give that up, it means so much. So was it hard for you at first to accept Christ into your life, or to be like, okay, I'm going to like switch religions or not be a Buddhist anymore?
Yeah. So our parents are from Laos, which is really close to Thailand. And it's true, they're like Buddhism is such a big part of life and culture. It's just like so intertwined. It's really hard to decipher what is which, to be honest. At first it was hard because I was just scared of judgment. I was like, how would people accept me in the communities that I'm from? But by the time I like truly got baptized, by then I already had a really strong community as well in church, which made it easier to be like, oh, I'm just gonna give my life to Jesus, because I've already been here. I've been serving. I've been making friends. I already had a routine at this point. So it was much more easier to do it. But I can understand, like, in the very beginning, I was like, what the heck am I doing? Is this even real? But it was much more easier when I was like, oh, wait, Jesus is real. God is real. This is easier to give my life to because I believe in it. But if I didn't believe in it, it would be so much more harder to sacrifice everything for this.
Yeah. Definitely. I think I heard someone tell me that when somebody who believes in Christ, who grew up in a different religion, believes in Christ, that's how you know it's like for real. And I'm like, yeah, that is true. It's a lot harder for both spectrums of like someone who grew up in a Christian home and like, you know, that's their morals and things like that, but then they question later on. But for someone who like grew up in a different religion, for them to, especially in Buddhism, especially for you to be like, that is my life. And then to be like, okay, that is not my life anymore. I mean, it just shows like the faith that you have in Christ.
Yeah, for sure. You definitely, I like how you touched on it, because you definitely have to choose it on your own. Like, no one's making you do this. No one's making me go to church.
Right? No, that is true. Oh my gosh, that's me every Sunday. As I'm trying to find a new church, I'm like, okay, now I have to like really go out there, search for a church, pray for a church, pray for community, pray for favor. Like before I go to church, I think as a single woman, going to church is, it hits different. Even as a single person, you don't even have to be a woman, but as a single person, every time I'm like in the car before I go to church, I have to pray for courage to go in, because I'm terrified of, you know, meeting new people or this new space or feeling like I don't belong. And it's weird because churches are supposed to be like, you know, welcoming. And then you find out like, you know, some churches aren't that, but they may be in, you know, other areas, or if you come continuously. But yeah, so church is, I can see why it's very intimidating sometimes.
Yeah, because you walk into this new space and you're like, what do people do here? Where's the bathrooms? How do people talk?
Right? I'm like, I just need the welcome table. People who are supposed to talk to me. Like, that's what I need.
Yeah. It feels like you're walking to like the cafeteria in high school and you're like the new kid. You're like, what the heck do I do here? Where do I belong?
Yes. That's such a perfect description of what that feels like. But thank you for sharing your journey with on how your testimony on how God has like brought you to where you are today. So stepping aside from that a little bit, we're going to talk about your creative process. You know, what fascinates you the most about storytelling when it comes to putting a video together, whether that is being like the producer, the director, editor, or the camera person?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm like technically focused on like a role, to be honest. I just like the idea of taking an idea or a person or a message and then amplifying that moment. So if it's something like really important that people would benefit from, then I'm like, oh, how do we make this bigger? How do we make this more shareable? And then all the other stuff just relates back to like who I'm trying to reach or how I'm trying to reach them. So if it's like Instagram, like, oh, okay, we're gonna go put this on Instagram because the millennials are on here. Then I just might just pick up a camera and then go do something lo-fi for Instagram. But if it's more of a, like an organization that might act in a more like director role or a DP and pick out like a more professional camera to shoot. But I'm more interested, I guess, in the idea that, oh, I can be in a room with one other person. And then from this room, it can also reach a million people if I just record the video.
No, I love that. How did you, I feel like you can do everything is from what I'm getting. Like, are you usually like a one person team kind of thing?
Yeah, usually I am, especially from working in like digital media and YouTube stuff. And then working at BuzzFeed, it's just like you with the camera, literally. So I just got used to it. It's certainly helpful when you have a team of people to hop in. But I'm pretty familiar with all aspects, which is good.
So out of all of those roles, which one would you say is like your favorite one to do?
Ooh. I would say I would like probably the director one, because then I can at least run the interview and ask questions. You know, like the core content. I'm like, oh, I can really shape the core content here of what we grab.
Yeah. So my question is like, when it comes to core content, how do you know what is the core?
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. It really depends. I worked for so many brands. So I have a very like professional take on this, which is whatever is important to the client is probably what I would go for. But ultimately, even with the client, it's like they're trying to reach a certain person. So I would say the core content or the messaging I would give is understanding who we're trying to reach and then what's important to them, and then speaking into those things.
Yeah, that's really good. Yeah, especially when you're working with like all of these different organizations, it is important to also get like their view and their perspective, because they are, you know, it is their video that you want to help produce, but also keeping true to your aesthetic and who you are and how you tell stories. So when it comes to these roles, how did you, for example, like learn to be better at them? Because for example, like being a video editor to then flipping over to being like a director, did you have like a mentor in between those spaces, or you just kind of like picked up what other people were doing?
I just picked up what everyone else was doing, to be honest. Also, filmmaking and storytelling is so collaborative and everyone has an opinion and they can't wait to share it. So it's taking a lot of opinions in and learning how to navigate all those different forms of feedback. But also I've like worked in like a creative space for probably like 10 years now under like different people. And just learning from all the different people, like what their storytelling techniques are, and taking whichever one makes sense for me and putting in my back pocket to use for later.
That's good. No, I definitely agree. It's definitely like a collaborative thing. And then it's also like very subjective because people's opinions will always change. Like even when it comes to like color correcting, to me, it might look good, but to someone else, it might be like way off or different. So it's hard to, like, you could always improve on a video is what I, for me, like every time I see a video, I'm like that I create, I know that I could work on it even more, even after I think it's finished. I know that there could be like fine tuning to it. But sometimes you just have to like, just put a stopper on it and be like, this is it. This is good enough. Yeah. And you know, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. It's like, it's not going to get that much better at this point. This is the best that I could do. This is the best that we could do. It's, we just do better next time. I usually have this motto where it's, don't aim for perfect, just aim for excellent, because perfect tends to be like, there's only one way to be perfect. But for excellent, you can consider things like, oh, this is excellent for 30 minutes. You know, this is excellent for, we only had $100.
I love
that's what
that.
I aim for.
Yeah, no, that's such a good saying. I'm going to like keep that in my back pocket now, as you're talking about like keeping good advice. So out of like the 10 years, what is the best advice that you were given?
Ooh, for creative things?
Yes, yeah, for creative things.
Ooh. It's probably just from church, to be honest. Just one of our worship leaders said that just learning how to serve actually makes the stuff that you make better, because we're stepping into a space where we're not thinking about ourselves and then what we want, but where we're stepping to a space where how can we actually provide value to someone, to a community, and the more that we're willing to serve people. So if you just really love people, like if you just love like a million people, you're like, well, how do I serve these million people? And I think that for me is probably the best advice, where you learn how to serve, learn how your own creative process works on providing value to other people, and just drop the ego and then move on.
Oh, that's such good advice. I find that like super applicable, especially in the job that I'm doing now. As I get to like go overseas, one thing that my boss always tells me is that we're not only here to make a video or like to tell a story, but we're also here to represent our organization, but to serve and to also like love these people. And so that has always been like one of the things that I loved about working with the CMA, is that we go there and we get to like build relationships with people. Oh, and CMA stands for Christian Missionary Christian and Missionary Alliance. And so, yeah, it's just really cool getting to know that we get to be a part of telling that story. Cause like not a lot of people will hear it. I mean, after we shoot the video and, you know, we put it out, then people will hear it, but we get to actually walk with them and see it, and then walk with them afterwards, which I think is a blessing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it like goes in the space of like, oh, this is your experience. Now it's like, this is our experience. Collectively, this is our experience. I'm just representing all of us.
Yeah. So I want to step a little bit in a different way of like how, not step, I want to talk about something else about, you know, your time at BuzzFeed. Could you briefly tell us what it was like to work as a creator there?
It was so fast paced, so high pressure, also so fun. I don't think there's ever going to be a time where I get to have so many resources around me to just make something. It kind of felt like art school all over again, except instead of being in the classroom where like 30 people critique you, you now have millions of people critiquing you. But it was challenging in a way where I really had to learn how to like work from my intuition because things happen so quickly, and learning how to navigate a lot of different creatives that are also so good at what they do. So it was fun. It was challenging. I probably made some of my most favorite things from there, but it was such a blur that I probably don't remember 80% of the things I've made there. But I think the most valuable thing I've learned is to not put my value in my work, because in terms of performance, I was making videos every single week. And then sometimes the videos flop, sometimes they do well. But if I was happy every single time it did really well and sad every time it flopped, I think I would be like an emotional wreck every single day. Yeah. So it was fun, and it was, I could probably look back at my like life when I'm like a grandpa or something and be like, that was so cool that I got to make a confetti cannon and someone paid me to do it.
Yeah, so when you are creating those videos, like even outside of BuzzFeed, when you, you know, what do you do when you start to have doubt in your creative process?
Before, I would just ask someone for their opinion. Now, I just tell myself to stop and just go like, no, it's great. Like, just believe in yourself. And I just move on. So at this point, it's the idea of like capture a thought and then take someone's voice. Maybe it's your voice or it's like a close friend that speaks life into you, that speaks truth into you. And then I just replace my negative thought with that voice.
I love that. I love how you're like, you don't even question it anymore. You're just like, okay, I need someone to like also hear me out and speak life into me, and I'm gonna do it. And because I feel like for you, it's like you do it, and then if it doesn't work out, that's okay, you're gonna go into the next thing, right?
Yeah, especially after all the videos I made. I probably made over like, I don't know, 500 videos at this point in the last couple years. So I'm like, look, there's another moment to make another thing. We ain't got room here to doubt. We're on mission, so we have to move.
So good. So good. I needed to hear that. For sure. I hope a lot of people are encouraged by that as well, because I feel like they can let their doubts just like take over for them and then they never start to do it.
Yeah. And also, no one really cares. People really care if it's really good, but if it's not that good, no one really cares. It's okay. Those stakes are low.
That's so true. Oh, you're just spitting good stuff today, Tiger.
Thanks.
So, you know, while you're working at BuzzFeed, did you find it challenging to share Jesus with like your coworkers?
At that point, not necessarily, because I was already posting about church on Instagram all the time, like on my stories, and they're just like, well, Tiger goes to church. So it wasn't a surprise at some point because I was so public about it on social media. And my friends were still my friends. But also, I think BuzzFeed is such a diverse company, so it welcomes a lot of diverse perspectives. So it really wasn't that bad. And also, I'm usually like a pretty chill, open, welcoming person. So people like to talk to me about stuff.
Which is great. No, you definitely are opening. And I think it's your smile that like welcomes people in.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's what it is. I think if it was like people felt very judged, then they probably wouldn't want to ask. But I was just chilling, eating my snacks and, you know, making my videos along with everybody else.
So how did you get involved with Who Gives a Crap?
I got laid off from BuzzFeed along with like 200 other creators. because they were just restructuring the whole video department. So they got rid of a lot of us. And then at that point, I was like, well, what do I want to do now? Like, do I want to go make more videos? And I was like, I don't think I do. I spent probably like 6 months just like chilling, doing my thing. I was also on like severance, so I had the time to like hang out and take a pause and evaluate what my next steps were, which is probably the best thing because I eventually decided that I still love creative things, but I wanted my creative impact to last longer and to be in some kind of practical form. Because the videos I made, even if it had like 50 million views, it's like a week later, no one's really talking about it. You know, it takes so much constant effort to really shape culture. So anyways, I just came back from another missions trip to Malawi, Africa. And then I was like, oh, that was so cool. I feel so alive. This is something I want to do. But I also wanted to do something with the internet and videos. And I want to do something like practically impactful. So I had no answers. So I prayed. I prayed. It was like, help, God help. I don't know what to do. What are my next steps? And then I just Googled best companies to work for. Because I didn't know what else to do. And then it was a top search result. Said, who gives a crap? It's an Australian company. They're looking for their first video person that knows how to do like DIY and viral internet content, but also impactful stuff because we donate half our profits to help build toilets around the world. I just came back from Malawi, and like one of our charity partners was also in Malawi working on toilets. And I was like, this feels like an answer to a prayer. So I just applied and then I got it. And I just stayed for like 2 years learning how to do marketing. I didn't have a marketing background. I just knew how to make videos that disrupted the internet. And that's basically how I got into Who Gives a Crap.
Wow, that is so cool. I love how like God prepared you at BuzzFeed to be able to work here at Who Gives a Crap. And you just said, like, you know how to make videos that disturb the internet. What does that mean? Like, how do you make a video that disturbs the internet?
Yeah, that is, like, the million-dollar question, I guess, that everyone wants to know. I guess my most basic answer is, if you want to talk about it to someone else, it's probably going to be disruptive for a lot of people. So just do it. Yeah.
Okay.
That's about it. I think being viral is basically creating something that is highly shareable. And then there's a lot of aspects to make things shareable. But if you think about yourself and why you share stuff to a lot of people, then you'll probably find the secrets very quickly. Like, oh my God, I found this like really good croissant place, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, oh my gosh, why are you so excited about croissants? You know? Because other people are also excited about croissants too, because I like croissants. Yeah. So it touches on things like curiosity, but also providing values in those spaces or like those gaps where everyone is like wondering what it is.
Yeah, I feel like there's a niche for everything. I didn't know that you liked croissants. Is there a favorite is there a favorite croissant place that you would recommend anybody in the Bay Area?
Oh my gosh.
Or LA?
Oh, I really like these chocolate croissants from Konbi, K-O-N-B-I, in LA. They also have like this egg sandwich that is really good. They're also like rated really high on Bon Appetit 1 year. So it's this super small little store, but you go and there's always the line and it's so good. That's it. That's my recommendation on croissant.
Okay. I'm going to write it down. And when I go back to LA, I'm going to visit that place. Cause you make it sound good. Like a chocolate croissant.
Yeah, like the layers are like even, and I'm like, it's really expensive though, so I don't go often.
The layers are even. Hold up.
Layers are even. I don't know what else to say. It just tastes so good.
I
I
could
just
just see
know
you
when
like
I,
taking a measuring stick.
I would say don't do it because as soon as you like, eat good food, you're like ruined for the rest of your life. Just don't do
That's
it.
true. That's true. Then everything is like up here because you had up here before. So, while working at Who Gives a Crap, you also created By Kind Humans. So, could you tell us what that is and what inspired it?
Yeah, I when did I do this? Oh, okay. I think I started right before Who Gives a Crap because I was sleeping on my friend's couch. It was like in between BuzzFeed and like Who Gives a Crap. And I just moved out from my place to my parents' house. So I was just couch surfing, like doing church stuff in LA. So I just woke up on my friend's couch one day and then we were gonna grab breakfast. And then I was like, yo, I got an idea. And then I was like, I'm trying to figure out how to put God in every household. God's a light. So I'm gonna make candles. And that was it. It was that simple of an idea. So I started making candles and I was like, I'm just gonna make being kind cool. And it started with candles. And that's really the short story of how it happened. I was wondering if there was a brand out there that made just being a good person really the thing to be. But somehow incorporating God in it in very practical ways.
Yeah, I like the name By Kind Humans. And then I also didn't know that it started off as a candle, because now you sell apparel, correct?
Oh yeah. I was selling apparel too. So I was just doing stuff. And then I was posting a lot of videos as well, because that's just my background. I was like marketing. Then the video started getting a lot of views. And at some point I was like, I don't got enough things to sell. So I had to really reevaluate what I wanted to do for By Kind Humans. And at some point I was like, oh, I'm gonna put this on a pause. I'm gonna figure out what I really want to do. Because at some point I was like, in 3 years from now, I feel like this could be successful, but I don't think I want a candle brand at the end of the day. Like it's not really about candles. So I paused and I was like, where do I really want to put my efforts? Like, what do I really care about? But at least at that time, I at least showed to myself that I really like entrepreneurship. I really like creating something meaningful. I really like creativity. I just didn't know where to direct my energy, which also led to business school.
That's great. Is it just you that runs By Kind Humans?
Yeah. I just somehow
Wow.
figured it out. I just had an idea. I applied for an LLC. And then I just ran with the idea.
Oh my gosh, an LLC. I applied for an LLC for my brand, Never Too Much. And I have to be honest, I had no idea what I was doing. I just filled out the paperwork and I'm like, send it in. And now you have a business, which, it's
Yeah.
cool.
Now you have a business, and then there's all these other things I didn't consider, like taxes
Taxes. Oh, yes.
and like documents, like P&L sheets. I was like, I literally had no idea. I just wanted a business.
Right? Right? I'm like, if I knew it came with this, which I probably should have looked into, I should have not have started the LLC, but it is what it is. It's
Yeah, it is what
happening.
it is. And then now I feel like I've learned so much about business. It's like a crash course in business. Yeah.
Definitely. And I feel like that will, I mean, what you're doing now will definitely help grow even more By Kind Humans. So, as we talk about like in the beginning, community and you starting to have this community at church, do you feel that community plays a big part in your creative journey? And if so, why?
I want to say yes. I want to say yes, mainly because the content I make, at work is different from the stuff I make at church. And it's cool when I'm a part of a community that also values the same things. It's one thing to make like a craft video about puppets for kids, and then to make one about a new school that's just built where we can invite other people in to continue our efforts to really develop this community. So I would say in terms of like community, it really helps just to ground myself in something that's bigger than me, especially a church community, because if I was just grounding myself in the work that I do at my job, I'll probably be swept up by so many different interests because we're always going through a reorg. And there's always so many different types of videos that conflict with each other. You know, it's like, oh, we need a video for this football team today. Oh, we need a video for this fashion celebrity today. But it's always good to have a community that's just grounded in things for the kingdom. So,
yeah. So where do you work now currently?
I know. I don't know if I can say it, but I work at this really big tech company. But yeah, I work at this really big tech company now as a curator. And now I just watch videos on social media platforms looking for like diverse voices, underrepresented communities to really amplify in the algorithm, I guess, the algorithm or in other places like partnerships.
Okay. This will be a secret between everyone who's listening and us.
Yeah. But basically my job is to watch videos and find undiscovered talent to blow up.
Whoa, that's cool. How did you get that job?
I went to lunch with a friend, and then one day she was like, hey, there's a job opening. You should just apply. And I said, okay. She was also one of my friends from BuzzFeed as well. So we work in this space. And then it was, I got into the company and I realized like maybe a third of the team is also from BuzzFeed. So it's we have a very specific like kind of editorial eye that is very useful for these types of roles.
Oh, that's cool. I want to get to that point where I can have this editorial eye like you, Tiger.
Yeah, I think I'm just overexposed to too many things now to where I'm just jaded to a lot of stuff. So it takes a lot for me to be like, oh my God, that is so cool.
I bet though, because I mean, 10 years you've been doing this, and then you worked at this fast-paced environment and you're picking up trends, you're creating trends. And so I can imagine that now the stuff that you find amazing is probably like really amazing. It's like when you ate that croissant and you're like, you can never go back to regular croissant, you know?
Yeah, it's like that. Yeah. You could ruin yourself through this process as well.
It's a foreshadow. Okay, maybe I should not create this editorial eye for myself.
Yeah,
but
when you do get it, like get it there, it's then you just start reaching like a new level of influence. Because at some point, I think, you know, everyone has like certain tastes and like styles, but when something's like good, it somehow transcends all those things. So when you know when something's like at the heart of it, really, really good. Yeah. And you understand like what makes it good on like a universal kind of aspect, it's probably like the best thing to know how to do.
Wow, you're like unveiling like the secrets here, like the internet secrets.
Yeah.
But no, I like watched your Malawi video in Africa, the one that you did on your website. And I said this earlier in the intro, but it's true, like I was so inspired by your video that I sent it to my coworkers, and I was like, I love this video. And I loved how you edited it in a way where it was like you had the three. Okay. And there's a point where I had to slow it down because I'm trying to figure out like how you edited this video. And I just love how you had like two screens playing at the same time, or like even like portrait modes of like three different people. Was that like something that you also was inspired by from another video, or were you like just playing around with it?
Yeah, I was just playing around with it because we had all this footage, but we didn't know what we were going to make beforehand. So sometimes it was like, oh, we need things for Instagram. Oh, we need things for like the recap video. And there just wasn't enough stuff for the main recap video, but there was some really good stuff that I shot, like portrait style, that I really loved. And I think in those moments where you're like put in a box, but you have something that you really want to share, like just new ideas come out. So I just played with it and I was like, this is powerful. I play things. Okay, this is my creative process. I usually have like a general feeling that I'm going for and like a general idea. And I think that the best example I've heard about artists was about painting in art school, where some people may draw like the border first of what they want to paint, and then they fill it in. You know, it's much more structured. And some people just put paint on a brush and they just start pushing it towards something. Yeah. I'm like a paint pusher when it comes to stuff. So if you like give me some footage, I have like a general sense of what I want to do. And I'm like, I aim for a certain feeling overall, and visually or like structurally, I don't really care what it looks like. But I think for that video, it was like the three faces, I think, in the beginning. And I was like, oh, I need people to feel like they're connecting really quickly to someone, and faces helps with that. I need them to feel joyful. Like, this is a welcoming environment. This is a welcoming country. And I was like, okay, these faces are going to work. And I wanted it to feel a little bit overwhelming, but not. So I was like, three faces.
I love that. Overwhelming, but not.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing with us your creative process. I definitely can relate to being a paint pusher instead of like creating that borderline. So it's really cool just to like get into your mindset on how like Tiger creates a video, especially because I like admire that video so much. So it's really cool hearing your editing tips. But you know, talking about your creative process, this year's theme for season two is about being present. And so what that means is like, you know, being present in your community and your environment, which is why we talk a little bit about community. But I want to know if you could paint us a quick picture of what your environment looks like when you do create.
I think I have like two modes I go into. There's also on the Myers-Briggs, I'm an INFP, but my introverted is like 53%. So my extroverted is probably like right there. So I have two modes because of this, and I just have to be aware of like what I need in the moment. But sometimes I'm like, oh, I've been around people too long, so I'm just going to be in my room and I'm going to turn off the light because I need it dark because I'm overstimulated now. And I don't need anything to distract me, and I'll just put on my headphones and I'll just like work on something. But then there's other times, especially since I've been working at home, where I'm like, I need the energy of like a room of people to feed off of. And then I just go to a cafe that's really busy, with people on laptops, because then I can like, oh my God, I feel like I'm doing something productive. I'm going to take this person's energy that he's studying. Or I can look around and be like, everyone else is working. You got to keep working.
I have never thought of that, like going into a cafe, or like if they're working, I got to work too. So that's like super interesting. Now when I go into a cafe, that's all I'm going to think about is like, okay, these people are working hard, I must still work hard.
Yeah. I feel like this is my office, so I have to like keep working.
Great. Thanks for sharing. You know, we talked about kind of like after post-production, and I kind of want to see what is your process when it comes to pre-producing. How do you know if it's a good story or an idea to run with?
That is a very good question. I wish I had a very good answer. But I guess I'll talk about some of the specific things I've made that I pre-produced. So there was, what do I know? Okay, here's one. Here's one approach that I can give you. This was at Who Gives a Crap, and it was one of my first, like, mega viral is not necessarily the right word because we weren't trying to go viral. We were just trying to make ads that brought in like a lot of revenue. But this is probably one of the most successful like ads I made. And the brief was make something that talks about being plastic free or connects our toilet paper to being plastic free because it's not wrapped in plastic. And we have a very like strong eco audience. Mm-hmm. And then there was this photo that we posted on our website, or not on a website, posted on one of our social media platforms that got a lot of engagement. And it was just someone that unwrapped his toilet paper rolls, kept the plastic, and saved it for a whole year and took a picture of it. Then you just see all of his plastic that he collected just from toilet paper. And then I was like, well, that's cool. Why don't we just interview him for the story? Because we already know it does well. You know, there was like a low lift way to test to prove that we have data that, hey, there's some signal here that this is going to work. So we could probably keep going here to dig more. But that's one way I did it. And then it was an interview on Zoom. I look back at it and I'm like, it probably wasn't the strongest interview because I've gotten better at it. But it did really, really well. It's at the core of it. It was a story that was worth telling and brought a lot of value to our customers. Another way I can judge if it's a story worth pursuing is if like I feel very moved by it, because then I'm emotionally connected to it. I can't really fight for it. It really matters to me. So it's probably something like at BuzzFeed, I made a video called Asian Americans Try to Speak Their Native Language. And that one was really close to me because I don't really know how to speak my native language well. And then I just pushed that one through like all my leads, even though they were like, had their feedback in terms of, how are you going to make this? You should do something like this. And I was like, no, you have to understand, this is really important. Like, you have to have these different types of people in the video. You have to have like these different groups represented. Because they're not represented. So that's another way to go if like I'm very tied to the topic.
Yeah, I think both of those are like really good advice on, or even like just feedback on how you know it's a good story and to run with it. Because when you're invested in it, then, you know, it makes you want to continue to do that project.
Yeah, yeah. There was one trend last week that went viral, and I'm not a part of this community, but I understood that I went like, why? And it was like National Moth Week, like moths as in like the insect. Uh-huh. And then like I didn't know anything about it, but there's like a very passionate group about like, they're so passionate about insects, and I was like, oh my gosh, for them this is worth pursuing this story, because other people are going to find value in it.
Right. And it's really cool how you can like literally find a video on anything that you love and then passionate people behind that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sometimes we try really hard to think about how to go viral, but sometimes it's just as simple as like, what are you curious about? How do you find those things for yourself? And then how do you share with other people?
Yeah, that's good. So an Instagram question that we got was, how has art helped you to learn something new about God?
I would say being like a creative person is really hard to create something really good. So when I hear things like God created the universe, I'm like, how? Like, this is so hard to make one video. Like, how do you create so much more? So for me, it's like when I step into things like creativity, it's like really understanding the magnitude of what God can do. Even though I feel like I can do enough for me in price for like some other people, for some companies, like it's not even close to what God can do.
Right. I always joke with my friends, like if I was God, everyone would be a stick figure. Like y'all would have no features because like it's just crazy thinking about, like, you know, as you talk about the universe, like every single person we know is made uniquely and differently in their own way. Like even if they're twin, like they still have their differences. Yeah. And so that's just really cool.
Yeah, like you ever try to write a script before and do character development? It's so hard to create a character.
Right. I remember younger me wanted to like write a book, like a fiction book, and it was just, I just don't know how like J.K. Rowling did it with Harry Potter, and she like writes millions of pages on just character development.
Yeah.
So, you know, it feels like on your spare time that you also work creatively, like, you know, you're also working at church. And then like, even when you're not working at church, it feels like your brain is still like working on like videos or thinking of like different concepts. So do you ever feel burned out? And if so, how do you take breaks from creating?
Yes, sometimes I feel burned out, but it's usually a signal to myself that I'm probably working from a space that's not really energizing for me. Like, oh, I'm working on this out of obligation. Might be like a thing. Or I might be creating something where I'm not learning. That could also be another thing. In one of my business classes this week, it's on organizational behavior. And it's about how to motivate people to create excellent work rather than just like the bare minimum. And we had this whole thing where people just listed what don't they like and why, and then what do they like and why, and then the sources are, they can overlap, you know, like you might hate laundry or some people might love laundry. But some of the things that why people disliked it was, well, it's not challenging. It's like a routine. It's not meaningful. But the things that people liked, which I would also say helps me reevaluate if what I'm making is energizing for me, is like, is it meaningful for me? Like, it can be hard, but if it's really fulfilling, like I feel like it serves a bigger purpose or makes a difference somewhere in the world, then I feel like the energy to finish it. If it's a little bit more challenging than what I'm used to, like if it's plausibly achievable but really challenging, then that's good. But if it's like too difficult for me, I'm like, yo, this is mad overwhelming. So that's probably be another thing. And I guess the other one would just be if I just, actually I'll go back to the first one. I think most of my thing is, does what I'm making really matter in the world? And if I can see the value of it, then I'll be more energized. But if I just lose sight of all those things, then I just start to work in this space, right? It leads to burnout.
So what happens when you do get burnt out? What do you find is a way that like refreshes your soul?
Yeah, journaling helps. Going back to the first reason why I said yes to it also helps, in case I just, oh, I wanted to do this thing because it matters, and then I get caught up in the whole, the little details of notes or something, the notes process, you know, or get caught up in the policies at work. Those things are sometimes unavoidable because they just exist in
an organization, but I always just have to take a break and then reevaluate myself and take myself back to why I want to do something. But in the meantime, I might just need a break and go hit like some tennis balls or go to the golf range to go hit something as well. And then at some point I'll be like, all right, cool, time to get back to work the right way.
Yeah, that's good. I find it hard for me personally to like step away from what I do because I love doing it, but it's also like when it's your work mixed in, I'm trying to figure out what I'm trying to say, but I feel like you understand, like it's your work, but also like you do it as a free time thing. Like when people mm-hmm. ask you, oh, what do you do for fun? Like for me, I'm like, I still edit videos for fun, or like I still film mm-hmm. videos or take pictures for fun. And so it's hard to find that like balance to draw that line, or even yeah. to like, oh, sorry, we're gonna say,
oh yeah, no, I was like, I totally understand. That's why I got a film camera, because I knew that no one is going to be asking me or paying me to take film photos of her. That I'm like, this takes way too long. I don't even know what these photos look like.
It's true. Unless they're like really amazing, then Tiger, people might ask you to take
yeah, film photos. I'm trying really hard to not take amazing photos.
Everything's blurry, out of focus.
Yeah, it's a vibe for sure.
So, you know, I really loved how you talked about like film, because it allows us to be present when we're taking the photo. So as a creative person, do you find it challenging to be present in your everyday life?
Oh, sometimes, I guess. Yes, but no. Yes, when there's a deadline. No, when it's someone important. I think I probably have like a close group of people that I know I'll always make time for. I'm like, okay, these are my people. We've been through enough together to know that like you guys are still gonna be my friends. Even if I move, or even if we don't talk to each other for a whole month. For those people, I'm like, okay, there's always like an exception. So I think I just prioritized my life in a way where if there's certain people that reach out or if we're hanging out, then I like make the time for them to like to be present. And then if there's just things to do, I've been fortunate enough to be around people that also just understand sometimes there's just things to do. But there's always something special when we just meet back up. And somehow it feels like no time has really went by, you know?
Yeah.
Just pick up where you left off. But sometimes I just also got to a place where I just realized that there's always going to be work to do. It can wait. You know, it can wait. I could just hang out and relax for like an hour and then go back to editing.
Yeah, that's so true. That's something I'm struggling with as well, or like trying to like figure out how to balance with like work and then hanging out with friends, and then realizing that, yeah, like this edit can wait, but this conversation or this opportunity to have this conversation again may not happen with that person, you know, because maybe the moment has passed or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. It's, I don't know. I don't have much of a clear answer. I guess it's just understanding. Also, like, people are really important. You know, like, relationships are really important. But also having, like, picking the right relationships to invest in are also really important. So, but also, I don't live near my friends anymore because they're all in LA. But sometimes I just video call them. And it feels the same. It just feels the same.
Yeah, I can relate with that, especially since I moved here in Ohio. Like, all of my close friends are in Kansas. And so, yeah, we have to set phone calls. And, like, even if it's, like, month in advance, I feel like as an adult, I've been doing that quite a bit. It's just like, okay, what does next month look like for you? And when are you free?
Yeah. Also, I know I'm like a relational person. So if I start to feel sad for whatever reason, like my social cup is not full, it just messes with everything else.
Yeah. So what do you feel like as you moved to the Bay Area, what has been one of the challenges that you faced while you were there?
I just got here. So trying to find community is one. Mm-hmm. I'm learning that the culture in the Bay Area is different from the culture in LA. People just talk about different things here. Not like it's good or it's bad, it's just different. Mm-hmm. So the church and the community that I was in LA isn't necessarily going to be look the same as it's going to look like in the Bay Area. Yeah. So that's like a thing. I'm just like trying to find people. I'm like, where are my people at that may not be into creativity? They may be like chemical engineers or something, but yeah, at the heart, we're the same. So that's probably the main struggle here.
That is true. I feel like there's a lot more like techie business people in the Bay Area rather than in LA.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, I was like, literally, everyone here works in some kind of tech company. I do too. So I was like, oh, wait, I'm one of you. I just realized at some point I was like, I really did just become one of you at some point.
That's awesome. But I know that you will definitely find your people and that God will bring them to you. I feel like lately God's been reminding me to not worry who, especially being here in Columbus. Like, I just have the sense of peace of, like, God is going to bring the right people at the right time. Like, I don't have to. I mean, yes, of course, friendships should, like, you should put effort into friendships. You should put effort into, like, finding a church, things like that. But at the same time, like, don't push for people who you feel like you can't connect with, if that makes sense. Like, you just connect with the right person at the right time. And that's how I feel. And God's been bringing slowly people to be like, yeah, oh, like, you know, this person has been placed on my heart. Let me set a hangout with her and things like that.
Yeah, no, that's good. You know, it's just like taking the time to really build a quality, like, community around you. And those things just take time.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to rush it and then you start just hurting people or people just start hurting you, you know?
Right. That's one thing one saying that I love is that community is not found, but it's forged. And mm-hmm. that could be in any setting, you know, whether you're looking for a new community or if you have a community and you're like, why aren't we, you know, more God-loving and things like that. But it's like, it takes time in any situation. Mm-hmm. So, you know, besides the challenges, what has God been revealing in your life recently?
That is a great question. It's such a big question. I would say, okay, this is probably the most recent thing because I just started business school 2 weeks ago. I now go to UC Berkeley at School of Haas, and it's like one of the top 10 business schools in the country. And then I was like, oh my God, these people are going to be so smart. They're going to like know how to do everything. And I'm going to learn things I probably don't know. Anyways, I'm here in class now. And there's some things I truly don't know. Like, if you ask me about microeconomics, I'll be like, hold up. Take a break here. But if you ask me things about, say, like, leadership, surprisingly, I just keep telling my church friends that the things I'm learning about being a good leader or a good boss is basically you can just learn it at church. Like, serving at church, being a leader at church is still like world-class leadership training. You learn how to motivate people. You learn how to serve. You learn how to be compassionate. And I was just like, literally, I sit there and I'm like, all this stuff you can learn on a Sunday for free. So that would be like my thing. I forgot what the scripture is exactly, but it's like, seek his kingdom first and all things will be added to you. And I think that's like so true. Because when I'm just serving at church and really building the kingdom, all the things were just added. I was like, oh, I'm getting all the leadership training. I'm learning how to run a team. But that would be my thing, I think, is the most revealing, even though I'm not like a really top business school. Still, just building the kingdom is probably the best training that you can do for your whatever God is calling you to do.
Yeah, that is so funny. You're like, you're going to business school, but you're like, I could have learned all of this at church. But I'm pretty sure you're learning way more, right? Like more words, different vocabularies.
Yeah. There's like some businessy aspects that don't happen in church, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But that's really good. It is true. To be a great leader, like, yeah, you have to serve well, serve others well. You have to be willing and patient and all these things. And I think it's cool that you see this, like, things that are similar to being a good leader and also like running a business as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, Tiger, what are some resources that you loved learning from and would recommend us?
I don't. Oh, okay. I'm gonna look up a book right now.
Okay.
We had to read this book. So, okay, I'm gonna backtrack real quick. I was leading a team at church. I was leading the creative team at church, and then all the leads come together, and we were learning basically every week to learn how to be a better leader. And this book was actually really, really good. It was called 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And it just gave you actual steps on what you can do. It was very informative. If you don't want to read it, just go on YouTube and just like listen to the summary for like 10 minutes. That would be probably one of my resources. And then another one, I keep referring back to this other book called Stories That Stick. And it's a book that teaches you also how to tell really great stories, and how it can actually make a difference in your business or in your creative work as well, because it gives you actual like pillars you can hang on. I'm like, oh, this is like a way to add value with a story. This is a way to create emotion from a story. So that was probably one of my other very informative books that I read. I'm also reading The Lean Startup, which is basically what Who Gives a Crap is based off of. It's like a new way to do a startup. A lot of people wait to create something until it's like perfect, like, oh, they got all the prep and then they put it out. But this book argues just make something enough so you can test out a theory and just put it out and then learn from it and then learn from the feedback and then iterate again. And basically that's the whole process. Just repeat the whole process until you come with a product that people actually value and want, versus just being on the drawing board for a long time and then you make something and then you realize it all falls flat. So those are the three things. And then I would also say, read your Bible. There's a lot of wisdom in there too.
Is there a favorite book in the Bible that you like to read?
Ooh, there is one that I do like. But I always go back to like Story of David as well. I'm really attracted to him just working in the field. He's just doing his thing. He's being faithful in the field. And he gets called to all these places just because he was just faithful doing his thing. So I really like that idea where when everyone's like looking at other qualifiers in a person, God still anoints certain people and calls you to like certain spaces that no one else can go into. And so that's probably one of my most like stories that resonates with me, that I carry with me all the time. Cause shoot, I'm in business school and I was an art major.
That is definitely a big switch, huh?
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah, because thank you for providing those resources, though. I'm especially interested to check out that storytelling one and that small business. I like what you said on, like, just go and do it, which I feel like has been an overall theme in your life, Tiger, of, like, you just going out and doing it.
Yeah. There's at church, there is this thing we call a perception matrix, where there's like four types of people in terms of you'll work with, and it's all kind of based like biblically on the books in the gospel. But there's a person that we call a friend, and then what they really want is just like relationships. They focus on relationships, and then if they do anything with people, then they'll be happy to do it. There's another category called sage, and then they need a lot of information before they go do something. There's one called a director, where they need other people to do stuff, but they're really good at delegating stuff and moving people along. And then there's another one called an activist, which they don't really need people, but they move really quickly and they get things done. So the example would be like a marathon race, like a running marathon race. And then the friend would be like, oh, I'm just going to run this 5K with another person, with my friend. We don't even have to win. We can just walk this whole thing, and they're perfectly happy. The sage wants to know, where is the race? How long is it going to be? How cold is it going to be? They have a lot of questions before they can, like, fully commit. The director is probably organizing the whole thing, and they're moving everyone along to make sure this event happens, and that makes them fully alive. And the activist is like, I'm just going to go run the race. And for me, I'm the activist. I just move really quickly. But that framework is really helpful to help identify people, but also like setting them up to succeed.
Yeah. I'm like curious, like, how did you realize that you were an activist, like, in your life? Like, how did you realize like you could work in this fast paced environment?
I mainly noticed, I thought it was a thing where you're like, oh, just go do it. Just tell people, just go do it. But not everyone is like that. So it's first identifying that not everyone is like this, but also realizing that when other people are set up well and working in their gifting, they do so well. But when they, as soon as you place them out of their like space that they're comfortable in, or then it just isn't as good. I think that's when I learned it. I was like, why doesn't this look like it's as good as what I've usually seen from this other person, even from myself? And it's just realizing that we're all just different people. And also my friends are like, Tiger, you move so quickly. Even though for me, I feel like it's normal. But when I look at the end of the day and people ask me what I did, they're like, how the heck did you do that whole list? All I did was hang out at home and watch a movie and go grocery shopping. So I'm realizing it's not normal for most people, unless you're activists, to move at the pace that I move.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the saying is really true that everyone runs at their own pace. And I like what you said about like when you are put into something that you're really good at, it's just easier. Like, I felt that all of like middle school and high school, when I was, you know, forced to do like, you know, math, science, all these things, and take the ACT. But then I go to college and I get to take these classes on like art and like making films, or I don't know, being a journalist, and I'm getting like really good grades and really doing really well because these are things that truly I'm interested in. So there's definitely a good point into what you're saying of like, when you do the things that you love, you excel well. So Tiger, how can we connect with you and how can we support you?
Ooh, I would say you can connect with me on Instagram. I'm on Instagram a lot, at Made by Tiger. That's kind of like the most social media that I use. as well. Also, I'm on TikTok at Made by Tiger.
Okay.
I also have a website. If you wanted to look at my work, it's no surprise here. It's madebytiger.com. And then from there, there's my email and contact information as well.
Awesome. You guys should definitely check it out. And of course, everything will be down below in the link. So if you guys want to support Tiger, watch his videos, or I don't know, just want to like ask him questions, feel free to look down at the link. And you guys can find, also you guys will find all the resources that he listed below as well. So Tiger, this is our last question. If your younger self met you today, what is something that they would be proud of or excited about when it comes to who you've become today?
Man, that is so, such an interesting question, because I remember up until college, I was like, I just want to be creative and be an artist, and I don't want to go into business or marketing. It's so boring. Obviously, I've changed my mind. And I think my younger self would probably be proud that I don't feel like I'm doing this on my own anymore. I think when I was younger, it was more about my goals and how do I achieve these things. But now, like, my focus is like, who are the people in my life? Who's my community? Who can I invite in so we can win together? You know, it's more about like, not only do I get to do this thing, but how do I also share these good things with other people? So I think that would be the thing I would be most excited about.
Oh, thank you for sharing. I think that's so good. And I think that's something I'm learning too, and I've been like reflecting on, is like how when we were younger, it was all about me and like our me mentality of like, how can I get to where I want to be? But now that we're older, we're like, okay, how do I get there with everyone else that I love? You know, how can I build better relationships, real friendships, and things like that? So thank you for, I know, just that like reflective process that you went through. I think it's very encouraging to hear.
Cool. No problem.
So as I said before, everybody, please go check out Tiger's work and don't forget to support him. Again, all of his links and resources will be listed and linked below. So Tiger, thank you so much for joining us here. And everyone, thank you so much for listening in.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you so much for tuning in on this episode of Turn on the AC. We hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as we did. If you don't already, follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and any other platforms you're listening to. You can also find and watch episodes on YouTube at Rosie Shong. Don't forget to leave us a comment, rating, or review to let us know that we're doing a good job. And if you enjoyed this episode, share it with your friends and family. If you'd like to be supportive of Turn on the AC to create more episodes for the future, feel free to donate through our Anchor link. You can also follow us on Instagram at the.asiancreatives, where we post sneak peeks of guests, how you can connect with them, and interactive stories. So thank you guys again so much for listening. We'll catch you guys on our next episode. Stay blessed, fam, and keep creating courageously.